Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and we shine a light ahead of us to the path where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of defending positions. Well, to many Americans, the 2016 election was a traumatic event. You know, the first gathering that I went to that November, right after the election, the weekend after, was at a church in San Jose where Mexican Americans were in trauma. They were fearful, concerned about disruptions in their community and the potential danger of being singled out and marginalized. Other people, people of color, LGBT community, women, people concerned about climate change and the environment, have seen some of their worst fears realized over the past 2 years. Beginning with the Women's March in January of 2017, large numbers of people have been mobilized against Trumpism, and yet there's still a feeling of powerlessness and despair. Although resisting Trump seems irresistible, the pushing against also seems to make him bigger and more powerful, as he and his ilk feed on even the most negative publicity is their nourishment. So the question is, how do we turn this rightful concern into generative action toward the future we want, and not just away from what we don't want? How do we make a positive, healthy, helpful contribution to our world in these times of crisis, danger, and chaos? Our guest this week, Stephanie James, a therapist who has helped countless individuals heal from their personal trauma, has some exciting ideas for how we can continue to heal our personal issues and use those insights and practices to shift powerless and reactive to powerful and proactive. That way, instead of buying into the fear-based narratives that put us in our reptile brain, we can feed the love-based ones that put us in our neocortex so we can be more creative, more present in our own lives, and consequently, more helpful to other people. Stephanie James is a psychotherapist. She's a public speaker, published author with a new book coming out, with nearly 30 years of experience in the mental health field, working with people of all ages and backgrounds, children and adolescents, adults and couples, as well as developmentally disabled and seriously mentally ill individuals. She has a passionate mission to bring as much love and healing to the world as possible, and shares this mission through a weekly radio show and podcast, The Spark, with Stephanie James. If you go to our website, either the Om Times page here or the Wiki Politiki, you'll get a link to her podcast and so on. She is the originator and host of the Spark Summit 2019, coming up in October, a summit integrating wisdom from thought leaders, national best-selling authors, and luminaries in psychology, science, and spirituality. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here.
Very good. Well, let's jump right in. So as a therapist, you've been working with folks young and old and in between for decades. Tell us about what you noticed in the wake of the 2016 election.
Well, you know, Steve, it seemed like right after the election, I had so many people in my office that were absolutely just distraught. Women and men, definitely some of my gay and lesbian clients. And there was just a lot of fear going on, people not knowing what to expect. And as we know, when our brain doesn't know what to anticipate, the unknown can seem extremely daunting and fearful. So that's definitely what was happening. A lot of people feeling that the boat had been tipped and they weren't sure how they were going to hang on.
Exactly, exactly. And that's a very good point that indeed, you know, when we're traumatized, we tend to regress back to the our instinctive, reactive brain. And it seems like there's been so much going on in that domain. So let's talk, because I think we're going to really talk about our individual psychology, our collective psychology, and the interplay between the two. What's your sense of our collective psychology in these times, both the forces that brought forth the Trump phenomenon, and then also the growth and the transformation that needs to take place?
Well, I think, you know, what we've talked about in the past, this thing about how, you know, there's been so much fear-mongering, and unfortunately, when what we're doing is we're meeting fear with or hatred with more fear and hatred, like you said, I think, in your introduction. I mean, if we're focusing on that negativity, that's what we're going to draw to us. Definition of one of the principles in quantum physics. It's what you focus on expands. So as we've focused on, sometimes I think when we're focusing on meeting Trumpism with all the negativity, it's just feeding that. And so I think we're going to have to look at how can we hold on to ourselves in a different way, and how can we resource ourselves and build some resiliency within ourselves so we're looking at actually what we can do. You know, it's like if we're anti-war, we're still focused on war. But if we're focused on a peace movement, we're focusing on what we want to create. We've got to move to what we want to create instead of what we don't want.
Great. So let's look at perhaps some of the people that you got to see. Obviously, there's all kinds of responses. I'm sure that there are people who have close friends and relatives who are on the other side, and it certainly seems like they're competing realities. And then how did you help people regain their equanimity without going into taking those two drugs, hopium and Dianetol? How are you able to help people find those other resources?
Well, I think one of the things that can be really helpful is that we have to learn how we get, you know, grounded within ourselves. Again, building resiliency, it's an inside job. So we've got to take the time to do that inner resourcing, whether it's through meditation, whether it's also talking with other like-minded people that want to start bringing a more positive message into their hearts and into the world. And so a lot of it was helping people to get out of that automatic fear response, which is what happens in times like this when we're seeing all this going on, when our fear gets ignited. It really is, like you said, that fight or flight response that happens to us. And mm-hmm. So we want to switch to that neocortex part of our brain that can say, oh, okay, yes, I had this automatic response. This was my reaction, because my brain's always, we have this thing in our brain, it's always scanning the environment for any sign of a threat to make us safe, to help make us safe mm-hmm. and perpetuate the species. So what we want to do is we can recognize that that's come up and then utilize that wonderful, you know, neofrontal cortex and say, okay, now I can make a choice about this. And so what I want to do is I want to move to a place of peace. I want to move to a place inside myself where I can listen to that still inner voice. And so it really doesn't have to be a huge process of I have to meditate for hours upon hours in a day. You can take 15 minutes out and allow yourself first thing in the morning. I always tell people, don't listen to the news when you wake up. You know, you're activating that fear. So instead, go within. And that's where you're going to cultivate that resource of some resiliency and stillness.
You know, it's really interesting. This happened to me yesterday where there was a, you know, there was a crisis, and all of a sudden there were these overwhelming feelings. And there was a moment where I was able to simply step away from the feelings and simply observe them. And as soon as they came to consciousness as an observation, I realized, oh, I'm not that thought. That's simply something that's moving through me. And simply by identifying it and becoming aware of it, acknowledge that that's not who I really am, but that's something that's moving through me. And then I can accept that it's moving through me, and I don't have to hold on to it or resist it or push it away, and just have it flow. And just having that one degree of separation from this feeling of being traumatized, just that in and of itself helped me feel that, you know, equanimity, that's not the same as denial or avoidance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes, I do. You know, I love that. In my office, we talk about naming is taming, is the mnemonic device we use to remember that the same is true. Like you said, it whether it's a thought or whether it's a feeling, as we name what it is, we're able to have that degree of separation from it. So we can hold it in observance instead of it being us.
Very good point. Very good point. To name it is to tame it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because then it's not, it's really interesting. There's a story about Andrei Solzhenitsyn in the Russian Gulag decades ago. And the most terrorizing thing was the firing squad, because it was very arbitrary. Nobody knew if it would, you, and they get killed. And so nobody ever talked about it. It was verboten. And at one point, somebody in the camp began to realize that if they were able not just to talk about it, but to make jokes about it, that would tame that fear. And indeed, it did. It didn't change the external situation, but it changed the internal perception of the people there, and it gave them more courage and more equanimity simply by being able to talk about something they didn't let themselves talk about.
See, and I think that's an excellent point, Steve, because I think that's one of the essential things. You know, oftentimes we're looking for our happiness, or we're looking to make change. It's all outside of us, and we can't always control our circumstances. And so we have to learn that, yes, exactly, we can get that equanimity that you're talking about from within. So interestingly enough, when we're able to go within and get that sense of peace and equanimity, then the circumstances don't seem to rock the boat as much.
Right. And all of a sudden you have other resources that you didn't have before in order to confront those, rather than being narrowed into this non-creative reptilian fight or flight state that the fear mongers want you in. You're much more controllable in that state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I talk to people about that as well. You know, when people's anxiety has been really high about the unknown, or, you know, what's going to happen today with Trump, and feeling a lot of fear around our political climate right now and all the changes. You know, one of the things if I talk about it, is I said, if you're going to have a fantasy about the future, you might as well have a good one, number one. But if you're playing the what if game, you're not in reality. You're saying, well, what if? And if you're in that state of anxiety, you are far less prepared. You are running on fumes to deal with whatever the circumstance, you know, however the circumstance presents itself. But if instead you know, if you're going to fantasize, like I said, have a great fantasy, bring yourself internally and get yourself to that calm place. And then no matter what circumstance you face, you're going to be dealing with it from this reservoir, and you'll be able to deal with it in a much more effective way.
That's so true. It's really, really good. You know, again, there, you know, that happened yesterday with me as well. I went, well, if I go down that road, that negative path, I'm going to actually create that, because I'm going to rule out all those other possibilities. And I realized, that's what you said earlier, that once you're able to name it, then you recognize that you have a choice in the matter, and then you can choose something different. I'm curious about something that, you know, given the fact that you've had, we'll talk a little bit more about your background, but, you know, you've had a career looking at individuals, studying people, noticing patterns in society. Any insights on how this this Trump phenomenon came about, looking at our collective psychology? Any thoughts come to you about our collective psychology and how that happened?
Well, I guess, you know, my sense, Steve, is that after 9/11, I think 9/11 really was one of those things that changed so much for so many people. It really rocked our sense of safety. And it really, you know, if anyone has seen the movie Free Trip to Egypt, there's one, which is fantastic. One of the women in that movie, you know, she said, I used to be a civil rights activist. I was somebody who I felt so good about the work I did. And then 9/11 happened and I've become prejudiced. I'm afraid of Muslims. And she really hated that part of herself. So I think that to address what you're saying or what you're asking, part of it is this collective consciousness of fear, where people have really over-identified the other. And so there continued to grow this kind of sense of how do we become safe? You know, we're definitely at the low rung of Maslow's hierarchy of needs here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in order to be safe, what? We have to build this huge wall. We have to keep other people out. Now everybody's suspect, anybody that's different. And so that is my sense. And then what the pendulum swung to is this place where then people are having to feel like they have to dig in and like, I'm going to react to you because I've got to have a stronghold in my belief system because yours is so different than mine. Mm-hmm. You know, so when we saw the ugliness with Trump and what he was saying about, you know, with women and all the misogyny, then we got the pendulum swing for all the you know, Me Too movement and all these things. And why I think those things are essential and very powerful, I also think we swung the pendulum all the way over to where it was a lot of negativity and a lot of fear. And again, I think we make more change when we swing that pendulum closer back to center, where instead of saying, I'm opposed to this, I'm opposed to that, it's like, I had a conversation with a good friend of mine this morning when I was out walking my dog. And, you know, he said that in one of his political science classes, they were talking about how we have so much more alike than we do different, even in our political views, if what we focused on was what we had alike. But what we choose to do is we focus on what we have that's different. And so it's really easy to decide.
Yeah, very, very, very good point. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how we recalibrate our individual inner life to have a positive impact on what's out there. This is Steve Behrman, and this is Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Help, my son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, Steve Behrman back with Wiki Politik and our guest Stephanie James. We're talking about our current political crisis and opportunity and how we as individuals can heal ourselves and have an impact on our world. I want to hear a little, I always like hearing about how people find their calling in their work. I find that a very interesting conversation. So tell us a little bit about your own journey and how you came to this work, and also the origin of Spark, which is a concept that you use a lot in your work.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about that this morning, in that I always feel like, even as a small child, I was really aware of that spark inside of us. I think, you know, people refer to it as our essence. I remember thinking, like, There's something in me that has never died. You know, that was literally the thought I had at probably about 4 or 5 years old. So it's always been alive. There's always been this spark within me, and that I recognize is within all of us. And so as I've grown and carried that through, it really made sense to me that as I began this work, and I guess I should share with you the story of actually the spark when the podcast came to be and the radio show. I was in my office, and I had been on a radio show the fall before, and I was sitting in my room and thinking about, how do I do radio? How do I get back on radio? Because I had just done a few episodes as a guest. I was kind of like the local expert. And wasn't doing that anymore. And all of a sudden, I heard this knock on the door, and it was who is now today my producer, Chris Lamprey. And he came in and sat down. He said, "Hey, I was just wondering if you'd be interested in doing your own radio show." And he said, I about came out of my chair. I was so excited and almost jumping up and down. And so it literally came to me in the middle of the night that, of course, the show would be the spark, igniting your best life, because I think we all have that inner spark inside of us. And I feel like, you know, my whole life I was called to do this kind of work, to help people get, you know, my 30-year career, it's definitely been in helping people recognize that and literally find that again within themselves if it's been covered up. You know, the Sufis talk about how that light in us can get covered up with many veils. And so our work is to lift up the veils. And so as we do that, we help ourselves to truly shine. And so that, you know, the spark for me just really made sense.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the veils, because people talk about apocalyptic times, and the apocalypse means lifting of the veils. And of course, veils are being lifted on toxic perpetrations, but veils are also being lifted on spiritual practices that have been kept in, quote unquote, protective custody until the right time. And the veils are being lifted on how we've covered ourselves over in the illusion of safety. You know, for those people who believe in past lives, and if you don't, by the way, you will in your next lifetime. For those people who believe in past lives, there's a recognition that sometimes there's a fear that we take with us. And, you know, if you live back in the times of sage burning, that is where they burned actual sages, then, you know, you can recognize that you definitely don't want that to happen again. I better keep myself under a bushel basket to make sure my light doesn't shine out so nobody notices me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely, I can see where that spark came from. And so what made you, what steered you into becoming a therapist?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, actually my very first year of college, I wanted to get out of Fort Collins. I had grown up in Fort Collins, Colorado, and of course, being an 18-year-old, I wanted to do something very different. So I went to the Brooks Institute of Art, actually, in L.A., and I was going to become a fashion designer, fashion merchandiser, interior designer, and that lasted about a year. And I came home, and actually, I had made it into the school that was in London, the art school in London, with a girlfriend of mine. But this is 1986, and that is actually when the American embassy was bombed there. And both of our parents said, "You're not going to school in London." So I was here at CSU. Well, I was here, and a friend of mine actually at CSU here in Fort Collins, a professor, Larry Bloom, who was actually my first guest on my show. I went and spoke with him, and after our conversation, he said, "You know, you're just a natural at this. I have a friend who's the advisor here in the department. Why don't you go talk to her?" And literally, that was it. It was like breathing to me. It was the most natural thing ever. Mm-hmm. I always had, you know, had this connection. I would label myself as a connector. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those people that I'll go somewhere, and even if it's the coffee shop or I'm getting my tires changed or whatever it is, and it ends up the person across from me is telling me their life story. And that happened to me as a child. It happened to me my whole life. So it was very natural to be a deep listener for me. That's something that came very natural. And that I literally, I feel like I've always had this kind of innocent part in me that's like this little girl that just is in love with people, just in love with, you know, I really feel like when I'm with someone, there's nothing else in the world that's going on around us besides that moment. And so to really tune in and to be with someone. So to be able to do that deep listening and to have a really open, loving heart to see that within people, even when they aren't able to see that in themselves, and then to be able to recognize that that person's healing potential is always there. Sometimes it is covered up with some of those veils that we were talking about, but it's always there. And so helping them to excavate some of the layers within themselves so that they can find that essence or that internal spark within them and really help to heal their lives.
Yep, it's interesting. I mean, some people are naturals at that because they're really conversant with how emotions work and also how to actually see or read between the lines, hear between the words, and so on, and use those insights to reflect them back. In these times of, as I said, crisis and opportunity, in navigating these times, how do we avoid either false hope that is illusory, or denial, or avoidance, or pushing something away that needs to be addressed? What kind of resources can people develop to be real and still hold a positive view and vision?
Well, I think that's, you know, it's a really important point because this process that you and I have been talking about, and even, you know, the going within, it's not about having rose-colored glasses on or pretending that everything is okay or denying that things are difficult. I think, you know, Hafiz, who's a poet, put it really beautifully in his poem, The Guest House, because he talks about no matter what shows up, to recognize it, no matter what emotion shows up at your door, whether it's a meanness or depression, he says, greet it at the door laughing and invite it in. And in the end, he says, you know, you never know if it's clearing you out for some new delight. And each has been sent as a guide from beyond. And that's truly what it's about. It's about just being aware of whatever it is that shows up. We can recognize it. We can look at it and observe it, and we don't have to get hooked by it. We don't have to let it dictate what reality is going to continue to be. I mean, I think that's part of this visioning process that we were talking about. You know, we can observe that we have a reactive mind, but we don't have to stay in reactive mind. We can observe that there's a situation that we don't like what's happening. We don't like the circumstance. We don't like how, you know, the climate is happening. Well, we don't have to stay a victim to our circumstances, that we can actually do something about it, but we're not going to solve it from that victim stance place. You know, like Albert Einstein said, you know, we can't solve a problem with the same mindset that we got into it with. So we have to get to that place where we can look at things and say, okay, this isn't rose-colored glasses, but what is a step forward? What is something I can do, even if it's a conversation? How many times, Steve, have you talked to somebody, and just by talking about maybe something that you're afraid of or maybe a dark feeling that you have, it helps lighten that up? You're no longer holding
that. It's always a great relief. It's always a great relief to have somebody as a listener that's not going to try to fix themselves in the process. If they get scared, then they're going to try to steer you off of your position. I really, really appreciate the Hafiz distinction that, in fact, the Swami calls it invite them in therapy. Whatever it is, invite them in. And that's the true nutrition, because when you do that, then you acknowledge, I mean, really, if you want to get very metaphysical here, everything out there in the dream world that we're living in, everything out there is a reflection of some aspect of our own psyche. Otherwise, we wouldn't even connect with it. We have no reference point. So how do we use those things out there as leverage points, not just to cope, but to grow and expand? If there's any, you know, without giving away anybody's personal information, if there's anyone that you've worked with who's taken this on and created a transformational experience out of a trauma or fear, it'd be great to have an example of that.
Yeah, well, I think that I can share this. You know, and this is just an example of how someone can transcend their circumstances, and it's not necessarily related to Trump necessarily, but it's a woman that I worked with, and a year ago when she showed up at my office, she was absolutely in devastation mode. She'd been in an abusive marriage for 43 years and had been physically and emotionally abused, and she just had every health problem going on. She just had a myriad of health issues and had lost her voice completely as far as being able to stick up for herself. And, you know, I mean, really the sense of someone who really was broken as far as brokenhearted. I don't believe we're ever truly broken, but her spirit was feeling broken. And so, you know, what she began to do, which I thought was so powerful, is a lot of times, you know, you'll have a conversation in the office and then someone will leave and they don't necessarily do their quote unquote homework, which is that, you know, you have to take the things that you're talking about and start implementing them in their lives. I mean, she really looked at, what are my limiting beliefs? What are the things that aren't necessarily true, but I've just believed them for so long that they feel true? They become habitual beliefs. And what might, even if I don't believe it fully right now, what would I like to believe about myself instead? And then writing to that, she would journal to that. You know, she did a time where she spent 30 days journaling every night to, what is the evidence that showed up in my life about the universe completely loves and supports me, which was one of the beliefs she wanted to instill in her life. And as we know, again, what we focus on, we're going to see more of. So little by little throughout this year, I saw this amazing transformation with this woman. And not only that, and I'm not just trying to plug my own show here, but she definitely listened to my show, The Spark. And she said, you know, when there were tough times, if there was a guest that she would resonate with, she would listen to that episode over and over again every night. And part of that, as you know, Steve, is this, how we learn by repetition and how we help to reprogram our minds to think a different way and so that we start feeling a different way. You know, it's old cognitive behavioral therapy 101. When we change the way we think, we change the way we feel, and then we change the way we act, and we have a more positive response in ourselves and then in our interactions with the world. And so this real woman really showed up and did her work. And, you know, the testament to this is, you know, a couple weeks ago, I hadn't seen her for a while. And when she showed up in my office, she, at 63 years old, she looked beautiful. She looked absolutely put together. Plus, she was healthy. Talk about her voice intact. And not only that, a few months ago, she started a blog that is to help other women to find their voice and other women that are abused so that they have some guidance of this is how you too can leave an abusive relationship. So you see the concentric circles of healing there. I mean, it's just really powerful.
You know, that really seems to be the case. There's a concept of the wounded healer. And I remember, you know, going through something years ago, the wonderful counselor and master I was working with, you know, you start to go, why is this happening? And her response was, so that you could be helpful to other people. Mm-hmm. There's something about having an experience that creates humility and compassion so that you're kinder to people. And in one's own transformation, you can present, you know, here's what happened to me. Here's how I started with that issue, and here's who I ended up with. So her doing this blog to help other people is a direct gift of the what she endured for 40 years. And you can see that, you know, her resilience and her happiness and her health and youthfulness is based on making a contribution in addition to healing her own situation.
Well, and I think that that's so important, Steve, because I think that so often, you know, people are ashamed or they don't feel good about their what they consider their weakness or places where they're wounded. And, you know, I think it's something that we don't have to hide. What comes to mind is a story of the Japanese vase that breaks, and in Japan they fill those cracks with gold because they believe then that it's in those broken places where we become more valuable. And I love that analogy for what you just shared and what is the truth. It is from those broken places where we can find humility, where we can find empathy and this depth of understanding of the human condition. You know, no one gets out of this unscathed. You know, we all have some collective wounding. And so we can also be a part of each other's collective healing. And we can each be a piece that helps contribute that healing to the whole.
Wow, good. I love that. We'll talk more about contribution when we get back after this little break on Wiki Politiki. Our guest is Stephanie James. Let's spark.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you waken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest, Stephanie James, and we're talking about navigating these challenging times internally and externally. When we took the break, we were talking about the idea of contribution. I'm fascinated with that because in a certain regard, all of this trauma and all of the stress that's being brought up is an opportunity to move forward and contribute something that actually does make the world better. So just talk a little bit more about contribution. I know you've used that in your work.
Well, I think, you know, it's one of the things that when we think that we're powerless to make change, I don't think that's true. I think that's part of that victim stance. Because when we go within and we do our own healing, it really does become those concentric circles. You know, it's changing how we're interacting with our friends and family. And if we're depressed and anxious, we're not reaching out. You know, we're much less likely to help others. So I think that there's, you know, the rising tide raises all ships. I think It's an important piece. So each person is an important thread in this fabric of life, this fabric of humanity. And so the way we can actually contribute is literally to focus on, it's one of the greatest gifts you can give humanity is, first of all, focus on yourself, healing yourself. That's not selfish. When we heal us, then we truly are better able to contribute to the whole. You know, you're not contributing on fumes, you're contributing from this reservoir of self. So that's one of the best ways, Steve, that I feel like we can contribute is to do some of that inner work. It doesn't mean, again, putting our heads in the sand and ignoring what's going on around us. But if we want to really reach out and we want to do some good things, we got to make sure that we're doing that inner work first.
It's really interesting because sometimes people will, you know, totally immerse themselves in serving others and thinking, well, and maybe it's I have to make up for something that I did bad once, or I don't really deserve to be well-being in this life unless I earn my way, and all of these other invisible beliefs that the people have. And so what you're saying is that if you want to contribute, the initial contribution that you can make is don't be a burden to other people. Maybe shouldn't be put that negatively, but by actually caring for yourself from the inside out and making sure you're caring for yourself, that's one less person that everybody else out there has to take care of. So I appreciate that. The Spark Summit. This is something that's coming up in October. I'm going to be part of it. Our mutual friends, Larry Dossey, Jacob Lieberman, a number of other people. Tell us how that idea initiated and what that's going to be like, why you're doing it, and what you look to get from it for us participants and presenters.
Yeah. Well, so it was really interesting because it again came to me, I call them downloads, during a meditation. And, you know, I've been doing my show, The Spark, about a year and a half now. And I was thinking to myself, or what came down, the download was, you know, I've been working with the most amazing people, the most brilliant minds and most loving, serving hearts on the planet. And how interesting that so many of them don't know each other or haven't even heard of one another. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about it that, you know, it's not 6 degrees of separation that separates us. It's 1 degree, you know, and that mm-hmm. if I could be that hub, I could bring all these people together. And what would that energy do if we, again, brought that energy together and not just, I guess the, what makes the Spark a little bit different too, the Spark Summit, is that Jacob Lieberman and I, who had become just wonderful friends, I was gifted a trip to Maui last August and got to spend a couple days with him. And so we had been kind of talking about doing this, what he called the Lights of the Round Table, where we would all be together. And what if, you
the
know,
lights
thought
of
leaders,
the round table.
We could
the
help.
Light, that's really good.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
And what would happen if we were actually having these conversations and we were talking about some of these big life questions that really matter, and we were not doing anything rehearsed. We were instead speaking from our hearts. So that kind of also ignited this, you know, idea within me to bring together all of these luminaries and not only have them come and present on the 26th of October, but have them come the day before and really, well, one of the things, as you know, we're going to film a documentary. So really looking mm-hmm. at how do we go from that individual, you know, spark, the microcosm, if you will, like with my client, and then how does each one of us, you know, there are very few of us that were actually born enlightened. And so there were moments where we all had to go through that broken or that dark or that hard place. And so talking, you know, each presenter sharing that story and then seeing how those sparks get ignited as we're sharing in our own group process and then how those then go over to the next day when then those sparks of inspiration are being shared with the audience. And it truly is about how we can energize and inspire and empower our audience, the people that are participating there, so that they can have increased joy, so they can break through their limiting belief system, and that they can learn that their healing is the greatest gift that they give to humanity. And that, you know, really, I love Jacob Lieberman saying, we're all the same height. You know, we're all in this together. So
yeah.
I think part of the Spark
yeah.
Summit is just that.
Yeah, you know, he is definitely a gem. We got reconnected about 5 years ago on the Holistic Holiday at Sea Cruise, and we had so much fun. And part of what I learned from him is that he really did have a situation where he was all prepared with his notes, and his notes blew off the table, and he had to actually wing it without them, and not having that crutch enabled him to present, to be present during the presentation. Mm-hmm. And I've been inspired since that time with my comedy performances to unprepare so that I can actually be looking at the audience and be much more in rapport and relationship with the audience rather than giving a canned thing, so that subconsciously some of the things that the audience is really wanting is something that occurs to me to speak about. You know, in terms of so many of these, you know, I've been going to these things for 30-something years, the Whole Life Expos and all that. And even 30 years ago, I was asking, okay, where's the graduate course? What's the graduate course in all of this? Mm-hmm. We all know You know, we've all sat in a room in a theater listening to brilliant and worthwhile speakers. And then the two things that happen after that is, first of all, the speakers get put on a pedestal, making them actually to their detriment. And then the second thing is we go home and we forget to implement all of the great ideas that we were inspired by. So I think that this is going to be a much more unpredictable and engaging event because of the community, the safe community that's being prepared, the field that's being prepared. So that, anything else you want to share about that?
Well, yeah, I think that's one of the important aspects is that it is also going to be very interactive and experiential. So it's not something people are going to go to and just listen to lecture. You know, it's something that's going to be very live, very tangible, very in the moment, so that it's really something that can be assimilated and people are going to carry with them, you know, through really being able to, it's much more of a transformational process when we are doing things, we are involved in that change. We're not just hearing about it. So we're actually changing our physiology as we're changing some of those limiting beliefs and breaking through, as you know, to these, you know, different levels in our life and realizing that we really do all help ignite each other. And so that is one of the special things about it, absolutely.
Now, you live in Fort Collins, Colorado. This is where you grew up. You've had many journeys out of there. I'm always curious as to how people re-land and reestablish themselves in places and what it takes to feel at home in community. It seems like you're solid in that little community. Could you say more about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I didn't live here for 19 years. When I got out of grad school, I got pulled up to Cheyenne and ran the cognitive behavioral therapy program up there for seriously mentally ill, and then ended up raising a family there. So what brought me back here, what was wonderful at the time, my 103-year-old grandfather was still living, my daughter with my two young grandsons, and my mom and my stepdad. And so, you know, Fort Collins, especially where I work, I work here in Old Town, and there's such a heart to this town. And there's so many friendly people. And so coming back here, even though I didn't know as many people, of course, after 19 years, there really is a core of warmth and connectivity. And you've been to Fort Collins. You know, you and Trudy and I went out to lunch in Fort Collins. There's something special about this town. And I think no matter what town you're in, you know, it's how do we connect in? You know, I love the feeling of going to the local coffee shop that I have here across the street. And I know all those kids. You know, I ask them questions. I reach out. And I guess that even circles back around, Steve, to this thing of random acts of kindness. You know, oftentimes we don't know how we're going to switch somebody's day by just engaging in those little conversations and actually inquiring with an open heart and a curious mind.
You know, I think that you were talking very early on about concentric circles. And, you know, of course, so many people are newly focusing on their own internal personal growth. And, of course, they're thinking about their families. And of course, everybody is concerned, many people are concerned about national and world conditions. But it's that layer in between. That's the layer of your immediate community and the people that you see every day. And these are not in, you know, Trudy and I loved Santa Rosa. We live in Santa Rosa, California. A similar kind of community.